cup. Boom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic. A sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
That it does is we are in the air everywhere. The vast power of the iHeart Podcast Network available, as you know by now, because you've found the podcast. You've stumbled onto the podcast that is available wherever you get your podcast, because 4 hours on the overnight are not enough. 8 days a week we do this podcast. This podcast drops on, depending on what day it is, we get Friday we got a podcast. Today is a Saturday. So yesterday we had a Hacksaw, critically acclaimed interview with Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, a radio legend from San Diego, from Baja to the Canadian Rockies. Loved Hacksaw. It was great. We appreciate him coming on. But we got one on Sunday as well. So it's 8 days a week. We get two on Friday with the radio show. And joined again, for better or worse, by the man affectionately known in the highways and hallways of Fox Sports Radio as Gag On, David Gascon.
Man, it's a long time coming. One day has passed, but I did God's work for at least one day, Ben Maller, and I will wait for you to eloquently and politely acknowledge what you're going to be doing over the weekend here in the next couple of moments.
Oh, so you would like that right now. So I was going to get to that later, but I can do that now if you want.
No, but you know what? Yeah. I was just thinking about this. Earlier in the week, as I was driving to the studio, I noticed two things. One, there was a ton of traffic. And as I got to the studio, two, there was no sign of Ben Maller. I'm kind of curious, with everybody else coming back to work, when are you going to get your ass in the studio?
I am really following the guidelines of management, and they've not asked me to come back. I did go down there to pick up some mail. In fact, I have to go back because Doc Mike sent me a book about piss, so I guess I've got to pick that up, which he thinks once I read this, I'll be brainwashed and I'll be hornswoggled into like guzzling my urine after this, which I'm very confident will not happen. And there's some other things I need to pick up. So I will go in there, and I have considered randomly going in and doing a show. But I have a setup here, and the thing that I've noticed now, because the company has me doing these YouTube videos in the home studio, it's set up perfectly to record these things. And it's not set up the same way in the main studio, which you think would be the opposite, but it's not. And I have a pretty good setup here that I've got my routine down. So I know at some point I'm going to have to figure out how to do the setup in the hub, but that's part of it. But no, I haven't gone in there. Maybe I'll go in at some point and surprise you. I'll pop in and say, hey, look, here I am.
Do you miss coming into the studio?
You know, I do. But the problem is I'm getting used to this now. This has been 2 months of doing the show from the home studio, so I'm kind of used to that now.
Yeah.
But I like the energy. I always got into radio. One of the reasons I got into radio is because I loved walking into the radio station. I remember the first time I walked into the Mighty 690 in San Diego, and I was like, this is awesome. Like the vibe, the energy. Of course, there's none of that right now at radio stations because of what's going on, but I'd really like to get back in that. You feel like special when you walk in there. You feel like this is a big job, when you walk into a radio station. When you walk into your home studio, you don't feel that big.
Yeah.
You don't feel that important. And plus, it's cool. I mean, we work, Steve Harvey, a legend in entertainment, his studio is right across the hall from us. Yeah. There's so many great stars that work at Premiere in radio, in our profession, that you feel like this is big. This is cool. We work with all these legends, and then now We're all apart more than ever.
Yeah, there's something really empowering about getting off the 405 freeway, and it's just
Now let me be clear. Now our studios, if you ever come to LA when things open up and we invite people into the studio and stuff, the studios are right where the 405 and the 101 merge, and I'm happy to report that I take the 101. Yeah. I do not get on the 405. The only reason I would get on the 405 is if the off-ramp right there at Ventura is shut down for some reason, or Sepulveda, and I'll then have to jump on the 405. But that's it. I don't go on the 405. That's a point of demarcation. I do not cross the 405. Don't do it. Don't cross it.
Yeah, you don't even cross it when you go get Tito's Tacos.
That's true. I saw that Tito's is opening up on June 1st, but only for delivery.
Wow.
And only local delivery. So that means we were trying to figure it out. I was talking to the wife about this. I was like, how are we going to get my Tito's fix? Because I don't have an address right near Tito's. No. So I was thinking either maybe they'll deliver the car. You know, I could sit in the parking lot somewhere. Or my father-in-law has a business in downtown Los Angeles.
Mm.
He runs a storage warehouse thing in L.A. So I could go maybe at his place and then have him deliver there, which I think is close enough that it might work. So I have spent some time thinking about that.
I wonder if they take telephone calls, because Chick-fil-A, which is down the street from us in Encino, was doing that. They have the Chick-fil-A app, so they'll only serve you if you're either driving through the drive-thru or you order through your app. And then you can pick it up either in the parking lot or you can pick it up at the door. Like they'll have like a door where you have a couple of vendors that come in and out, and servers.
Yeah. I went last week and to make sure my dad was still alive. I don't want to get in trouble, Gascon, but I did visit my father. I'm a bad person. I did. I visited my old man. And so we picked up some food to bring to him, you know, a meal, and obviously, and we went to a restaurant that we like. And you can't just walk up and order at that place. They had slots. You had to park your car and you had to order on the phone. So even though I was right there talking to the person, you know, we were talking, they had, no, you got to go, you got to do it on the app or whatever. And that whole thing.
Yeah.
They didn't have a drive through. So
no. So what's on the menu today?
Yeah. All right. So this is a mildly, marginally entertaining show. We're in the middle part of this show. We're going to get to another doctor. We're going to call him Dr. G. And this is a fan of the show. This is a fan of the podcast and the radio show who reached out to me to come on this podcast. He had some things he wanted to say. He was upset with the narrative about the coronavirus and the way that it's being described in many of the mainstream media outfits. And he felt like he's on the front lines there working at a hospital on the East Coast. And he wanted his story told. And I was a little skeptical at first because I was like, I don't really know. But we had him confirm. We did our due diligence to make sure he was legit, because anybody can email me from anywhere. But this guy's a legit guy. He sent us, everything possibly you could imagine to verify who he was, and he did that. And so that's how this all kind of began, and we'll have him on talking about his story and whatnot. But before we get to that, we've got the Flintstones meets the Jetsons. Instead of set it and forget it, just forget it, we've got that. But we begin with what's in the box. What's in the box? So, you know, I'm pretty much a hermit. I leave my house for like an hour a day here. I go for a walk. Sometimes it's an hour and a half. I went on a 2-hour walk the other day. I've been sleeping very well.
Yeah.
Which sucks. And so as I get up, I got to get some sun, get out, get a little daylight, you know, see the world, walk around. I can't go to the gym anymore. That's over. So I went out walking around. But so then, I don't usually check the mail even, who's going to send me mail. So I get this message, hey, go check your Porsche from Gagon. So I go out there, and there's this big box, I'm thinking, oh, boy. And it's got some kind of like a health label on it, I see like a buzzword there, I think I saw organic on that or something like that. So I'm like, what the hell?
Perishable.
Perishable. Well, perishable is not organic, but no. I saw there's a big word on the box, big black box. I'm like, did Gascon have Doc Mike send me a goat head or something like that? And so then this massive box, I take it through the front door of the Mallard Mansion. I put it there on the kitchen counter. I then have to run back. I grab some scissors to kind of cut open the box, because it does say perishable on it. I open the box, and it says here, there's a message right on top. It says, to Ben Maller from west of the 405, never in my whole life have I ever been more afraid to see the end results of this endeavor. God help us all. And there is what looks like a beautiful piece of meat here. It's American Wagyu tomahawk steak, bone in.
Yes.
Bone in. And I assume you want me to do like a cooking video, Gascon? Is that what you would like me to do here?
Yeah,
to
just, yeah. I was thinking of asking maybe Fats to come on to guide you through this, but he's currently probably lighting himself on fire again. but to give you the skinny on this thing, it's 40 ounces, 2.5 pounds, or 2 pounds, excuse me. And yeah, two friends of mine, Colin, who you got a chance to meet a couple weeks ago, Colin and my other buddy Patrick, who's on the front lines as well, working in the LA City Fire Department, we actually went to the Langham Hotel like a year or two ago just to go out and have some dinner, and they have a restaurant and a steakhouse called the Royce, and I've never had a tomahawk before, and so a friend of ours actually worked there, and she's like, you got to get it. So they brought out this giant dish, and that's all we ordered. Me, Colin, and Patrick, we ordered the tomahawk, which was a little pricey, but I kid you not, with 40 ounces, I could have ate that whole damn thing myself. It was so good, but we absolutely demolished that thing. And I figured this would be a perfect present for the guy that celebrated his birthday that absolutely threw me against a cross and stoned me to death.
What?
And said I didn't reach out to him for his birthday. Oh. So given that the shortage in meat, Ben, this was actually ordered before your 50th birthday.
Well, it's not my 50th birthday. It's my 30th birthday. Well, I just turned 30.
But
to
be completely transparent, it took a while to get to you, just obviously with the shortage. Yeah. And
well, thank you. That's very kind of you. And I see the it's got a little pamphlet that this thing came with on how to properly cook the steak.
Yeah.
But I noticed there it says your preference. It's got listed here as rare, medium, medium well. I do not see well.
Yeah, no.
I do not see well listed here. And it's somewhat annoying here that they don't have that. They're like, our people are being shunned. You know, the president, Donald Trump, loves his food well done, much like myself. So, but I do not see that. But I guess I'll have to do it medium well then.
Yes.
I guess I'll have to get a little pink in the middle there and take the medium well.
So, I think you're going to have fun with it. I
appreciate it. They're very kind of you to do that.
Yeah. This is perfect for when you, because typically you say when you break your fast, you go all out that day or that night.
Yeah, yeah. So. I go big. Like this week I had, let me go to the phone here. Hold on a sec. Let me check this out. I want to do some fast. I'll be like you. I'll be bragging about my fast.
Your 96-hour fast?
No, that was only when my gallbladder got taken out that I had my record fast, the longest fast ever, 90.1 hours, because I had not eaten for 48 hours, and then I went to the hospital, and they wouldn't let me eat for another another couple of days. But let's see, the other day, this week, I went 64 hours. I had a 64-hour fast.
That's good.
And I also had about a 50-hour fast.
Solid.
So I had... Yeah, so I pretty much ate. I think I ate on Saturday. I ate a bunch of food on Saturday. Didn't eat on Sunday. Didn't eat on Monday. Ate on Tuesday, and then didn't eat on Wednesday, and then ate late on Thursday.
All right.
And then, picked up. The weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I just eat, a couple times or whatever. So.
Well, you know this from back in the day when you were running around the world traveling with the Dodgers, that they have this thing that everyone calls is the slump buster. This will definitely be your fasting buster. Like, I recommend that when you finish a long fast on a Friday or Saturday, this is on the menu. It's front and center.
I will put that to good use there. But this is more of a weekend item.
Yes.
Because I can't. During the week, I got a lot of crap going on. We all do. But on the weekend, I can just focus on the meat.
Yes.
Focus on the meat.
Now, that leads me to one thing I got to push back on you on regarding your regular show, Monday through Friday. I thought you had a golden opportunity to capitalize on something from Sunday night, and I was a little shocked that you didn't. The flu game, or the pizza game, the food poisoning game, I thought that was going to be a perfect opportunity for you to jump along the same linear lines as Michael Jordan, because not only did he play in Game 6 in a closeout game for the Chicago Bulls, but you actually hosted a show after burning your mouth eating pizza.
No. See, you're misguided here, I guess. That is not the most impressive feat of broadcasting with some kind of ailment.
Well, yeah, you shit your pants and then hosted a show. I get
no,
that.
No. Before that, I had gallstones, the most painful thing. You think you're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And the show continued. I kept doing the show with gallstones. Seriously, I had gallstones going on.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that was brutal. But anyway, we're going to get to it because we got a lot. It's going to be a very long podcast. The Flintstones meet the Jetsons. Now, this is an outdated reference, but you know what? Sometimes in television, typically in television, they have crossovers. You know, it's like where characters of different shows get together. It's kind of obvious. Like, you know, I grew up watching the Flintstones and the Jetsons, all these old cartoons. And they had an episode where there's like some kind of time machine and Fred Flintstone and the Jetsons got together and all that. So yeah. I bring this up because I got a phone call from management the other day. And then, you know, ring, ring. And I'm like, anytime I see management, I'm like, oh, shit, what did I do? You know, what did I say? I'm like going through my head. Did I say something? Did something get on the air that shouldn't have gotten the air? Did they finally hear Doc Mike? You know, what's going on? And so anyway, management calls me up and they're like, hey, we've got a proposal. And I was like, okay, I'm listening. And they said, we want to do a crossover show. I said, okay. And so I agreed to it. I'm actually excited about this. And so this coming Thursday, Thursday into Friday, the Friday show on the overnight, I will not be in the overnight, the normal seat here, which I'm reluctant to leave that position, but I will not be on that show Friday of this week. So no lame jokes. Don't send any jokes for this upcoming week because we won't be on the air. But I will be sitting in the number two chair next to Rob Parker on The Odd Couple. I'll be filling in for Chris Broussard, who's got some time off here, and I will be schmoozing with my friend Rob Parker. And I think you're actually going to be working on that show, Gascon. So that's, yes, how about that?
Wow.
3 hours of amazing content. Primetime Maller from 7 to 10 on the East Coast. That's Afternoon Drive on the West Coast, 4 to 7.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good. I love Rob. You know, we've had meals with Rob. I think Rob's great. I love that he's a shitster, and he's got strong opinions, and he rocks the boat, and he's good. He's entertaining. So I'm excited to go into the radio octagon with Rob Parker. We're gonna have fun with that.
That's gonna be May 28th, correct?
Yes. That is May 28th.
Now, I know part of the reason why you're not apprehensive about doing this is because you're already used to KLAC AM 570 here in Los Angeles covering your show up. So this will be no different for you during the prime hours here in Los Angeles of being covered up.
One thing that we point out here, that does happen. I get covered up by reruns of baseball games, which is really a kick in the nuts.
Yes.
But I understand they sold it. They have advertising, whatever. Good for them. I don't really care. And I used to get really upset about being covered up, and I'd rant and rave. And I remember one time years ago when Fox Sports Radio was in its early days, and I found out that they were replaying Olympic events overnight, and I was getting covered up by luge or something like that.
What did you say, women's ice hockey?
Well, that was even before that. Yeah, I got preempted by women's Olympic trial hockey, which was really just a dagger to the gut. But I learned at some point, you know, you do the show, and if people love the show, they'll find the show.
Yeah.
Like, the fans of the show will find it. You can't really worry about that. And the great thing, now more than ever, like back in those days, there was no podcasting, didn't really exist. You either listened to the show live or that was it. But now, like, if you miss it, you can, there's like 7,000 different ways you can hear the show. You can satellite radio. You know, if you're driving a truck, you get satellite radio, you can hear the show. Almost always cleared on Sirius XM, Channel 83. And you've got iHeartRadio, the streaming services. There's some other streaming services we're not supposed to say that our show's on that you can also listen to. And then we've got the iHeart app with podcasting and all this. There's like a zillion ways you can hear the show. So yeah. I don't really worry about it.
That's nice. And it's limited, though, because, I mean, we're doing this for a limited time before we go follow Joe Rogan to Spotify, right? Yes? That's the idea.
Yes. I'm calling my shot right now. It doesn't have to be Spotify. Anyone that has $100 million check. I am in. I don't care if you have no listeners. I could be talking into a garden hose. I don't care. Yeah. I will yell into that garden hose loud and proud. Cha-ching, cha-ching. I'm telling you right now, my dream is to be a sellout. I want people to call me a sellout. I want people to say, you're just some rich guy. I want that. You know, I did a monologue this week about the owners, and everyone's like shaming the owners in baseball, taking the side of the players. Because people look down upon the rich, even though everyone's rich. It's just the owners are more wealthy. Yeah. They're super rich. They're aristocrat rich and all that. But I don't feel that. I don't just look down upon people because they have a lot of money. Nor do I look down upon people because they have no money.
Right.
You know. So, but a lot of people do that. But I would like to be one of those people that has ridiculous FU money, and that is the goal. But I'm looking forward to working with Rob. That'll be fun. It's a standalone, one-time thing. There's a chance to do more than that. But I wanted to do the overnight show, and I didn't want to miss that. But I am going to miss it one day this coming week. But you can still hear me, and we're still doing the podcast and all that, so it'll still be on. So you get plenty of this nonsense.
Now that'll be beautiful. So you'll be working with Rob Parker, myself, and also Wrong Button Bob,
and the vegan. That's like the dream team right there.
Wow, you're gonna have five people that are fully attentive at one time during the show. How does that make you feel?
That is a low blow.
Well, no, like
David Gascon.
No, but
right,
because you're usually
shots fired.
No, because you're usually. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you have no editors during your show. You have no interns, and then you have a limited staff.
Yeah, we have nothing. We have nothing.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on from that, and so again, that's Thursday. This coming Thursday here, May 28th. Although on the schedule it says February 28th. I don't know if they sent the schedule out for the company. It says February 28th. Maybe I can have a time machine and go back and do it on February 28th, which we could go out without masks on February 28th, and we could go to restaurants and sit down and eat like human beings. It's an amazing thing. Anyway, so instead of set it and forget it, just forget it. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we said we thought we had a guest. It didn't work out. Well, one of the people that was in the running to be that guest, I have been negotiating, and I'll let you in behind the curtain here. And so we're trying to figure out who do we want to put on the podcast. You know, this is designed for interviews and whatnot. In fact, we've got coming up in a few minutes, we'll hear from Dr. G., who's working in a hospital on the East Coast, and he wanted to tell his story. So we'll get to him coming up in a couple minutes. But I wanted to talk to some people that are like, I'm big fans of, and one of those people, I grew up staying up late at night watching infomercials. And the legend of infomercials is this guy named Ron Popeil from the Showtime Rotisserie. Chicken, I believe, is the I think that was the item there. But he had the line, set it and forget it. One of the great lines ever said. And so I am Facebook friends with Ron Popeil. And so I reached out to him, and then he directed me towards his publicist. So believe it or not, he still got a publicist. He's not actively working anymore. He's an older gentleman. And I reached out to the publicist, a very nice woman, for Ron Popeil, and we've been going back and forth in email for the last couple of weeks. And she originally, when I first contacted her, was very excited. She said that Ron would be perfect, but she had to check with Ron and all this stuff. And so anyway, we went back and forth, and much to my dismay here, we have been rejected by Ron Popeil. He has decided not to do it, and I'm trying to figure out why, and I'm not sure exactly. Maybe it's because of Lenny Dykstra. I don't know, because they asked for a list of the people that we've had on.
Yeah.
Because I guess if we don't have big enough names or the wrong names, then these certain people won't come on. But it's disappointing. I'm still a Ron Popeil fan. Not as big a fan. Not as big a fan as I was. I'm not going to lie to you. But it would have been fun because he's had an interesting career and all that. But he has decided to pass, which is his right there. And we will get other people. Who's his rival? Maybe we should, you know what I should do is we should try to get his, who's the other big guy in the infomercial game that's not, like Billy Mays is dead, so we can't get him on.
That's the guy that you compared me to, right?
Yeah, you look like Billy Mays. How about the ShamWow guy? Is he still around? The ShamWow guy? We get him on. Or the MyPillow guy.
MyPillow guy would
that?
Be great, yeah.
We should try to get the MyPillow guy on as like an FU to Ron Popeil. We could put the MyPillow guy on.
But do you think some people, do you think your audience would be offended? Like, because he's a Bible thumper? Do you think like his religious?
Ron,
yeah.
Or the
pillow guy.
The MyPillow.
Yeah. He's religious, but.
Well, listen. There's certain people that run around looking for things to be offended by. So those people will be offended. Right. The people that are running around the always offended crowd.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm offensive. That is offensive to me. How dare you?
Yeah.
All right. Calm down, Snowflake. All right. Let's get to this doctor. What do you say here? All right. So just to give you the backstory again, if you missed the beginning here, I don't know how you'd miss the beginning, but I got an email about a week ago from a fan of the show who works at a hospital on the East Coast, and he did not want to use his name, but he felt it was important. He wanted to tell his story about the coronavirus and what he's experienced, and he was upset with some of the media coverage and the way this thing's being portrayed in the media. And so... let's welcome in. We're going to call him Dr. G, and we welcome him into the fifth hour with Ben Maller and David Gascon. So the first question, we'll start with this, Dr. G. Why did you contact me?
Yeah, you know, I'm frustrated with the way that all the scientific information about the coronavirus is being presented. We have, you know, just a vast amount of information. None of it's very good because none of it's really been peer reviewed, and they're all small little studies. But unfortunately, only the negative side is being displayed. And, you know, your famous line is, when the legend becomes the fact, you go with the legend. And it's frustrating because no positive information is really being displayed to the public.
Yeah, and so you're working there. You're in the hospital. And what has it been like the last couple of months? Because you see, I know the first month you saw the news stories. You're on the East Coast, but the news stories were like, oh, man, everything's going to be overwhelmed and all that. And what has your experience, your personal experience been like?
You know, so I'm coming from the surgical side, not necessarily the medicine wards, but we had to completely shut everything down. We were very worried that we were going to run out of personal protective equipment. A lot of it comes from overseas, and so that was a big issue. And also we wanted to be able to funnel it towards the medicine side and save it in case they call on us, because we take care of a lot of these patients on the respirator. I think the biggest frustrating thing is I have a lot of patients who come in, and although their surgeries aren't considered emergency surgeries, you know, like your gallbladder, there's conditions that they can't function unless they get surgery, and they can't go to work. And so not only is the coronavirus laying people off, now I have more and more people who would be delayed 2 to 4, 6 weeks to go back to work after a surgery who have now been delayed, you know, 2, 3 months. And that's taken a big hit on us.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Yeah, and just to follow that up, I mean, you mentioned the science, and we've talked about it on this podcast a bit, because you are right. It seems like anything that is positive, you'd think normally in a situation like this where it seems pretty bad at the beginning, when things change, people would get excited, but people make their mind up and not. But you're in the medical industry, so what are the people around you and you guys, when you're talking behind closed doors there, without giving any names to violate HIPAA laws, but like what is the conversation like, and how does this relate? You know, you've been around for a few years, so how many, you know, how does this relate to some of the other things that you've experienced or the other doctors have experienced?
So, you know, between you, me, and the fence post, and I guess everybody listening, a lot of us think that this is absolutely, like, we're living in the Twilight Zone. We don't understand, you know, it's good to be cautious. This is not something to just blow off and make a joke about. I mean, people are dying, and their mothers and sisters and brothers and fathers. But just the vast or the rash steps that we've taken to prevent this, we're all looking around each other and sitting in the lounge or on the wards and talking and being like, this is not nearly as bad as it's been predicted. Why are we not changing things and getting more focused towards back to how things were? And, you know, I mean, this kind of the same thing happened in 2009. And speaking with a lot of the folks that were around then, obviously it was a more familiar virus than what's now, and it was discovered in the United States. So I think that gave us a little more sense of security. But, you know, Dr. Fauci was on the news saying the same things. Don't touch your face. Don't touch your mouth. But nobody was required to wear masks. We didn't perform social distancing. some students got let out of school, but it wasn't nearly at this. And so, you know, even these top minds, you sit around and talk with them, and I've talked with people from other cities, other hospitals, different regions. People are a little bit perplexed as to why these decisions are being made.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.
Dr. G, before we brought you on the podcast, Ben and I had talked about a couple different things, but one of them he had mentioned was that you did not want to use your name and where you're working at for specific reasons. What are those reasons, and why do you feel like you can't come out specifically to acknowledge like where you're at and what you're doing?
Yeah, you know, it's really for fear of negative backlash. It's there's so much of it. You look at anybody who talks about this positively, and they're pretty much ostracized.
Yeah.
And the things that we're talking about, and I'm going to say, they're not my opinions. This is just published data, peer-reviewed data. And even if you try to have a civil conversation with someone about this, if they are not in the know, they look at you as if you have some type of agenda. And I don't want to talk about politics. I don't really prescribe to either side. But a lot of this is being played as either the left or the right, and there's some type of political agenda. And I just don't want to deal with that kind of backlash, because I'm not here to advocate for any side. I'm here to maybe give people a little bit of hope that things are going to get better and they're not going to be as bad as they've been predicted.
Yeah, like taking a line from Dragnet, it's like the names have been changed to protect the innocent, and you're in that position. While you've been working or even away from the hospital, has anyone that you either know directly or indirectly come across individuals that'll work for FEMA?
I do have a friend who's worked for FEMA before. He was big with Hurricane Katrina. Basically, he does inspections of dams and housing sites, flooding sites, things like that. But no one working with this specifically.
Okay, the reason why I was asking is because Ben and I have gone back and forth on this, because we're here in California. California, New York, Texas, Arizona, and Florida are among the biggest names in across the United States with how their numbers have been, cases versus deaths, deaths versus cases, and then also elderly versus the young. But people have made this statement that states like Florida are manipulating their numbers for the sheer reason of bringing down their cases. Do you find or do you feel that any of that information is actually accurate at all, or do you feel that what Governor DeSantis has been publicizing and obviously displaying is accurate to your best of your knowledge?
You know, I think the issue with all of these numbers is that we're looking at a very limited set of data. The biggest thing with this is, depending on who you read, 50 to 80% of the people that have this never know they're going to have it, are entirely asymptomatic. And a bunch of us have been exposed, and we're all younger individuals. Direct contact with people, we didn't know they had it. We've operated on some people, didn't know they had it. We've never had any symptoms. So you look at the numbers that are reported, and if what these studies are saying is accurate, you need to at least double the number of confirmed cases, if not multiply it by 5 times. And so now that makes your denominator huge in terms of looking at the infection fatality rate. And it drops it down, 2 to 5 times what it is. And if you want to bring an antibody testing into the conversation, it goes down even more. I mean, they've estimated maybe 25 to 50 times more people have already had this. So it's really hard to say which numbers are accurate and which numbers are inaccurate at this time.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Yeah, it's interesting, Dr. G, because I have some friends that are in the medical industry, and they've told me that they think this has been in America since like maybe December, possibly before that, with people traveling from China and the thing spreading around. So this shutdown didn't start till March. So you're right. I mean, the timeline on this, it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about if the amount of people that came out of Wuhan, China, where they think this started, and to America, to hub cities in America, and then those people went out, and this is as contagious as everyone thinks it is, but not as deadly as everyone now thinks it is. It's really crazy. I think this probably went around December, January, February, 3 months unchecked, and then in the United States, and then in March they decided that we better roll this out. It's It's kind of crazy. I mean, the numbers are wild. Have you been tested for the antibodies or any of that stuff? Or have you had the coronavirus?
We have not been tested. The only way we're getting tested is if we become asymptomatic. Symptomatic. I have been exposed to multiple individuals, and, you know, essentially they didn't have a stop coming to work. It was just you go in, you wear your N95 the entire time that you were there, and if you start to develop any symptoms, then they would test you because they were trying to keep the kits essentially for those who were symptomatic. Biggest reason is because the kits aren't very good, and so you have to use multiple testing kits on folks to actually ensure that they have the coronavirus, and then, you know, those are the folks that you triage to a higher unit of care, so they're not just testing us widely. And to talk to your point, you know, look at the number of flights that come into LAX from Asia, especially China, every day. I mean, you're talking about 30, 40, 50,000 flights in that time span, starting in November through Christmas, where this thing was just going unchecked.
Dr. G, two other questions that I need to do in terms of follow-up with this. Based on what you're doing, your activity level inside the hospital, one is, what is the morale like? And then two, what are your schedules been like? Are you working 12s? Are you working 18s? Are you working 24s? Like, how has that been structured? And do you feel like there's a lot more strain built on the hospitals now that you're at, as opposed to the pandemic actually opening up?
So I think morale is a little down just because we've been, so clamped down by the system, just to try to ensure that everyone's safe. We're also, things are opening up for us here, we're starting to get back to our normal daily lives, but, you know, people, you have very highly active people, especially in surgical fields, and when you're sitting around, you're not able to do things, you're not able to act. That definitely weighs on you. In terms of hours, you know, we work a lot anyway. We're usually there from 12 to 14 hours a day regardless. So it really hasn't changed it for us. I think probably on the side of the medicine folks, they're there maybe a little bit longer in terms of days in a row now because they're trying to separate people where you keep half the staff out or as many as you can for a week at a time so that if people do become symptomatic and test positive, if they have to go out for 2 weeks, then you can bring in folks in their stead. So I think they've been doing some longer shifts in terms of the number of days.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I do have friends that work out here in Los Angeles at Keck Medical for USC, UCLA, Providence Hospital as well. And they actually have to go through procedures. They have to go through training to get and to wear PPE masks, to take out any kind of medicine. And that doesn't even include any Z-Packs. Has that been the case for you guys back east too? No matter what field of the hospital that you're in, whether you're a doctor, nurse, pharmacy, whatever it may be, you have to go through extra protocol to get these devices?
Oh yeah, it's really gone through the roof. I mean, this stuff is, you know, who thought having these would be worth gold? I actually found a box in my house from when I had been painting, and it was a great day. So yeah, I mean, we've gone through donning and doffing all of the PPE. The American College of Surgeons has gone through a very rigorous or created a rigorous set of guidelines for especially intubating patients, extubating patients, changing out tracheostomies, anything that has to do with the airway, because this is transmitted through droplets. And so now we're requiring, before we go into the operating room, it's only the anesthesiologist and the certified nursing assistants who are in the room with N95s on and protect you if you're intubating the patients. And we treat them all 100% as if they have this version of the coronavirus. And then we're allowed in, and then when the patients are extubated after the procedure, we have to exit. And then the whole room has to be completely turned over and sterilized, and we're only using specific rooms and specific equipment for patients.
Okay, so when you take the Batman suit off and you're outside as a normal civilian, are you exercising? Are you out and about regularly? And also, are you wearing any kind of mask when you're outside the hospital?
So I am doing my best to respect the wishes of the general public. In terms of that, I have been keeping my social distance. I try to do things judiciously. I mean, we're opening up here now, but before this happened, people have a lot of information they receive. I'm not going out of my way to say, hey, I know better than you, I know more than you, I'm not going to follow the steps. Masks here were never a huge thing. you know, and unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation about the masks, which give people kind of a false sense of security. You know, University of Minnesota, actually in April, when this suggestion came out, their Center for Infectious Disease and Research, I mean, they came out with a summary about the use of masks, you know, and to give you a quote, basically, masks are not very effective cloth masks. The particle size, which you're trying to protect from getting into your lungs, the coronavirus, cloth masks stop maybe 2 to 3% of those particles from going in. Even surgical masks aren't great. About 55% is the best. And there's been no studies that have ever shown that wearing masks has actually decreased the transmission of upper respiratory infections, but not with any statistical significance. There is some correlation. So, I mean, you know, to quote them, they said, leaving aside the fact that masks are ineffective, telling the public to wear cloth or surgical masks could be interpreted by some to mean that people are safe to stop isolating at home and are stopped, you know, are safe to stop using social distancing. And so actually I think that that recommendation may have been inappropriate because, you know, you see a lot of people out there with their masks on, they're touching them all the time, touching their face, touching their cell phone. Yeah, I think it's a false sense of security.
Yeah, and just to kind of wrap this up, Dr. G, I'm glad you reached out. You're a fan, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate what you guys are doing there at the hospital. But anything that we've missed here that you wanted to pass on to the person listening here that you think's important that we have completely screwed up and not gotten to?
No, I don't think you guys have screwed up anything, and I appreciate you having me on. It was nice of you to make some time for me. I think the best thing for the individual to do and for their families is, you know, do whatever you think is best. If you want to continue social isolating, if you think that wearing a mask is important, if you think that not going to public events is important, do what's best for you and your family. You know, each individual is different. Obviously, this thing affects people differently based on their predisposed conditions, based on their age, and definitely follow whatever your local and federal government is telling you to do. But I think in the grand scheme of things, the extremes that we've gone to in order to prevent the transmission of something that more than likely has already been spread throughout a majority or at least a large percentage of the public, and something that for the most part, most people will be just fine and okay. I think that when things open up and when you're allowed to go back, treat life as normal again and don't be afraid to say hello to someone. You don't need to wear a mask. It's okay to pick up somebody's wallet if they drop it and hand it to them. You know, don't let this thing change the way you live for the rest of your life, because we're going to look back on this in 5 or 10 years and say, hey, it wasn't that bad.
Dr. G, one lighter remark that I need to make to you, too, is we appreciate you obviously reaching out, but I know that you confided in me before we passed you along to Ben that you're actually more of a fan of the Fifth Hour as opposed to Ben's overnight show.
Come
yes,
on, I know that. Come on.
Well, you know, I miss David's voice on, you know, the regular show. I mean, I'm a podcast listener, and just, you know, you keeping him on only on the weekends. This is why he parks crooked every time. He just wants to make you notice him more.
Wow. I mean, that is, what the hell's going on?
He's doing God's work back east. I got to give him a little props.
Fishing.
No, I appreciate it, guys. One other thing to the public, don't drink your urine, whatever you do. I know someone else told you to do that. Not recommended, okay?
See, that's from the radio show, the urine drinking's from the radio show. All right, listen, be safe out there, Dr. G. Thank you, man, and thanks for listening over the years here. We'll talk to you again sometime.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have a great one. Be safe.